CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Bob Zimmerman, who keeps the website Behind the Black. And we're going to the moon with SpaceX. We've talked about the contest between commercial carriers getting awards from NASA to make the flight to the moon, perhaps stop at the Gateway, which is in orbit around the moon, and perhaps then pick up a lander and go to the surface of the moon. A lot of contracts, and SpaceX has won. Bob, is all of them? Did they win all of them?
No, they've won 90% of them. This is a really interesting story that I posted. You know, we were talking in the last segment about how the numerous commercial effort that's beginning to fill up the slots available at ISS. Well, there's also a lot of contracts, missions, unmanned and manned, that are going to the moon that NASA is funding, and a lot of them also have private customers that are going to fly on these robotic landers. So last week, Firefly, which is going to launch a unmanned lunar lander called Blue Ghost on the moon, carrying both NASA payload and science instruments as well as private payload instruments, it announced that SpaceX is going to do its launch. They're going to use a Falcon 9 rocket to launch it sometime in 23. And at that point, I decided to go down and list all the different contracts and lunar lander missions or lunar orbiting missions that are now being built, and who has won the contract to launch them. And it was pretty astonishing. There are about 10 missions planned or have flown. One of them has already flown. That was Israel's Bereshit lander from 2019. And of these 10 flights, SpaceX has won 9 of the contracts. That's a 90% launch market share. That's really astonishing for a company to gain 90% market share in a new industry, and that's what SpaceX is doing. Because there are a lot of launch contracts to the moon, and every one of these private landers that NASA's contracted private companies to build these landers, but they are still private companies, and they can choose the rocket they want to launch on, and they have many rockets they can choose from. They're almost all going to SpaceX, and the reason is pretty obvious. SpaceX offers them the cheapest rocket launch facilities. It's cheap. It's reliable. It's much cheaper. ULA is the only one that's won a contract. It won one contract for Astrobiotics Peregrine Lander. It's going to use its Vulcan Centaur rocket, which is right now threatened with delays, and I don't know if they're going to make it. So this just tells you once again, there is a lot of business here. SpaceX got 90% of the share, but you know, that's not a healthy, and that means there's a need for competitors to come up and pick up some of the slack, and I really like to see someone do it. Someone like Blue Origin's New Glenn rocket finally launch and finally start competing with SpaceX. We need that. We need that badly.
Ryugu was an asteroid visited by Hayabusa 2, the Japanese probe. We now have samples back on Earth. We don't know exactly what they found, but is it exciting, Bob?
Oh, it could be extremely exciting. There was a paper published this week by Japanese researchers who worked on Ryugu. This was not looking at the samples themselves that are now on the ground. This was looking at the data that Hayabusa 2 gathered when it was orbiting or flying in formation with Ryugu. And what they found is that they have now discovered and identified on Ryugu the oldest rocks on that rubble pile. And they are thought to be the initial, what they call fluffy material, very porous and light, that would float on water, these boulders, that come from the initial planetesimals that Ryugu originally was. It got smashed into by something, broke up into a lot of little pieces, and then came together again as a rubble pile. But initially, the dust in the planetary nebula gathered together to form these very fluffy, light, porous planetesimals. These boulders are scattered across Ryugu globally, so they're available everywhere, which means that the samples that Hayabusa 2 delivered back to Earth could contain this kind of primitive rock. And if that's the case, the data they can get from these rocks, which will never get to Earth on a normal meteorite, they're too delicate, they burn up. So we could have something very precious in that sample, because it'll tell us something about the very early solar system that we know nothing about.
Right. We've got less than a minute, Bob. You're charting Curiosity. Where's it bound?
Well, okay, not so much me, but Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter got a great picture of Curiosity on top of that rock outcrop that I've shown pictures from that spot. And so I posted this on Behind the Black, which is really cool. You can see where it's been, where it's going, and what it looked at. And then on top of it, John, I posted this week a beautiful image that it's taken of the giant cliffs in the Geddes Valley, Vallis Valley Canyon that Curiosity's heading for. And I've got this on Behind the Black. And it's really spectacular because the cliff is several hundred feet high. It's vertical, straight, and it looks just like big cliffs on mountains on Earth. And I can just imagine mountain climbers going up it. And Curiosity is going to be traveling by this stuff in the coming years, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website. Behind the Black. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.